get to experience it for breakfast.
He's like, hello!
The Toucher and Rich Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
You talked to Aaron Rodgers this week. Reached out. I know you guys are friends. It's pretty well documented. Some people call it a bromance.
Oh, really? I don't call it that.
What do you call it?
Call what? My relationship with him?
Yeah.
It's just, we know each other. Yeah, we're friends.
Have you reached out this week?
No. Oh, we haven't.
And hello again, everyone. A very pleasant good evening and welcome to Foxborough's Gillette Stadium for this week 9 encounter of the 6-2 New England Patriots and the 3-3-1 Green Bay Packers. And as always, it is great to have you with us, and especially so for this matchup of two of the most famous franchises in sports.
Patriots! Go Patriots!
Gordon Prince in motion. Brady with a fake to him. Pitches it left for James White to the 10, to the 5. A touch to the end zone.
Right now.
Out of the eye, Devlin in the fullback up in front of Cordero Patterson. Takes the hand up and Brady runs up the middle. Lowering the shoulders, driving into the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
First guy to go to him on the sideline is Bill Belichick.
Takes the snap, he hands it to White. He runs it to the left side. He's in this time. Touchdown, Patriots. And they're back in the lead. Back are Gordon and Hogan. Now Edelman in short motion. Brady screams.
Lateral.
It's a lateral to Edelman. He's looking to throw. He throws it back to James White, left side of the field. He runs to the 35. 25-20. 15-10. And he's tripped up, diving inside the 5. Rodgers and hand to Jones. He runs it through the left side. He fumbles. Ball is loose. Patriots should have it.
They got it.
The Patriots take it over. Second and 10. Brady drops back. Throws it down the left side. Wide open. Gordon makes the catch. Slips a hit. Goodbye. 20-15-10. Touchdown, Patriots.
Oh, start the buses. What a Sunday night.
Patriots with an impressive win over Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, start the buses.
.985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Bob Soucy is brought to you by New England Fat Loss Personal DNA Plate Strategy. When you know your plate, you maintain your weight. This is science, not sales. New England Fat Loss to New England's long-term solution for sustainable weight loss. Bob Soucy, the voice of your New England Patriots, here at your home for the New England Patriots. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Hello, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What is it like the moment that you see Scott Zolak turn from regular to Zoe to smelling salt Zoe?
Well, I thought last night he might need x-rays because when they played Josie at the stadium and they put him on the video board, Zoe got especially amped up, even by his standards, and he slammed his hand repeatedly on the counter of the booth. And as soon as the music died down and we were ready to resume, play turned to us and said, I think I broke my hand.
Like, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
You know how when women, there's like a car in their child and they can lift it up? Like, they get this incredible strength.
Yeah, the adrenaline, yeah.
Yeah, I think that when Josie plays at Gillette, he could lift a semi up.
Absolutely.
And then eventually have it crush him.
But if you were to go in the booth today, if they haven't cleaned it up yet, you would find the ice pack that someone was dispatched to retrieve from the medical assistance area for Zoe and his left hand. Hopefully all is okay, and he won't be wearing a cast today when he joins Beetle for their show.
Oh, that's funny. So he legitimately needed an ice pack after slamming his fist up against the counter.
Well, he called for one. As it turned out, it might have been a false alarm, but he was definitely in pain for a little bit.
Well, that is
adrenaline wore off in a hurry.
That is
always a safe guy to hang out with.
That's a well-adjusted man right there.
Oh man! Well, so yesterday we were talking about this earlier in the show, and I believe that this was the most impressive win of the series of the season so far because of what they did on both the offensive and the defensive side of the ball. Do you agree that this is the most impressive of the year?
Yeah, I would say definitely for the defense especially. The offense had to be resourceful. It wasn't Brady's best night, and they didn't have Gronk, of course, and no Sonny Michel. So Cordarrelle Patterson continues in his role as the Patriots' tailback.
And Green Bay's defense isn't good.
Yeah. You know, the Packers, there are definitely holes in that defense, especially without, you know, a true safety to quarterback the defense with Clinton Dix traded away during the week. I was impressed going into the game with Green Bay's defense last week against the Los Angeles Rams, and I think they have some young players who could certainly flourish down the road. But overall, you know, the Packers are not the caliber of defense that you know, the Patriots faced, obviously, week two when Jacksonville was playing well, or may face down the road, especially when they get to the postseason. But I would agree, Rich. I think it was a complete game in a lot of ways. You know, still a couple of penalties on special teams that you'd like to clean up. But, you know, they squandered a chance with great field position. They had a goal-to-go situation where they were turned away, you know, third down, fourth down, some curious calls there. But overall, nonetheless, I think with the atmosphere, I think the way, again, that they were able to be resourceful, the defense's performance, Stephon Gilmore limiting Davante Adams. For the most part, he had the assignment on Adams, limiting him to 40 yards receiving yardage after he'd come in, coming off three straight games of at least 130 yards. Overall, I was impressed.
Yeah, Gilmore's been great all season long. Like, he's the one guy you can point on the defense and say, all right, he has been consistent. But I'm going to ask you what I asked Troy Brown earlier. What has changed? I mean, because this was a good win against a very good offense. Mm-hmm. And they still held them to, I think it was tied for their lowest point total of the season, the Packers. So what has changed? What have they figured out, if anything?
Well, I think a couple of different things last night stood out to me. You know, Trey Flowers the last 2 weeks has really been a force for them. And maybe it's a simple result of being healthy. He was banged up in the Jacksonville game, of course, had a concussion in that game. And then, you know, really, after missing a contest, took some time, I think, to come back into form. The last 2 weeks he's played especially well. But yesterday, you know, they really did a good job overall against Rodgers in applying pressure on him, but contained pressure. And eventually they got to him a couple of times late and forced throwaways, or, you know, had a sack by Flowers and Adrian Claiborne, who's had a knack of getting to Rodgers during his career, first in the NFC with Tampa Bay and Atlanta, and again last night. But I think also it's Kyle Van Noy finding his role on this defense and playing very well the last several weeks. It's Jason McCourty continuing to get better for the Pats. I mean, I think back to what it was like at the end of the preseason when a lot of us wondered whether he would be on the team after he was playing safety in the late minutes of the game against the Giants in the preseason finale. And he did an excellent job for the most part last night. And as well, I think, you know, they tackled well in the secondary, didn't allow a whole lot of yards after the catch. And I think that was, you know, evidenced by the play against Adams in particular. I thought he got a first down that I thought was a bit of a gift on a spot across the middle. But overall, I think it's a matter of roles being better defined, guys starting to flourish in those roles, and simply, you know, getting better as the season's gone along.
I want to get back to Cordarrelle Patterson, who all of a sudden is a running back by necessity, but he is alternately the best athlete and the most frustrating athlete to watch at the same time. How do you see him?
Well, I can understand the frustration early in the year, you know, especially when he would catch a screen pass and, you know, lose his balance, but I think the last couple of weeks, it says an awful lot about his willingness to do what he can to help the team. And I think maybe some people wondered whether, you know, he was that kind of player when the Patriots acquired him. You think about a kick returner and a wide receiver who typically was used on jet sweeps, plays to the outside or throws down along the sidelines. You wonder if that player would ever invite contact. And here's a guy who's been willing to take a handoff and run behind the fullback, between the tackles, take on defenders. You have a play last night where he dragged a defender for several yards with a, you know, fistful of his shirt tail, the touchdown run, lowering the shoulders, you know, driving it in there. You know, that's impressive to me. That, you know, that's a role where you're going to get hit, and he's been willing to do that. He, you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, is he a finesse guy? And you know, when he was out back there last week, it looked so odd to see him at tailback. But I got to give him a lot of credit for being willing to do what he's done the last couple of weeks.
Now, what about Rob Gronkowski? And, I mean, first of all, how worried are you? Any time that was a strange week altogether for him, the press conference and obviously him with the last minute being inactive. Where do things stand with Gronk, and how worried are you?
Well, I think there's concern, Rich, and it's not just the last week. You know, when you start to look back in the context of the last few years, really, the back surgery a couple of years ago, when he missed the stretch run and then didn't play in the postseason, then coming back last year, you know, the reports after the season that, you know, he wasn't necessarily enjoying himself, the deliberation on his part over whether to return, you know, what was said, what wasn't said during the offseason, especially early in the offseason. Then when he did return, I think it was for minicamp, and he talked about, you know, football not being a lot of fun when you're banged up and injured. And then what we've seen this year, where something hasn't been right, whether it's physical, mental, or a combination of both, whether it's been the back or the ankle. The absence is two of the last 3 weeks, especially considering the incentive nature of his contract and, you know, how important it is to be on the field accumulating statistics for him financially. You know, it really does make you wonder. You know, here's a guy that, you know, is central to that offense operating at full efficiency. And the Patriots have not had him a whole lot, you know, as the Gronk we've come to know. You know, hopefully 2 weeks out of the last three sitting on the sideline plus a bye week coming up after the Tennessee game gives him a chance to recuperate. And he does get better the way Dante Hightower seemed to do early in the year. But I think there has to be concern.
All right, I have just retweeted a video, which I guess the official Sports Hub account put out last night, of the moment Scott Zolak may have possibly broken his hand. And at the end of it, he turns to you and goes, "I think I broke my hand." So that does look like a pretty – like it legitimately looks like he is in pain at that moment.
Oh, yeah, he was definitely in pain. I think you know, Tim, who runs our social media accounts and the website at the station, did a really good job of editing there, or at least he cut off the video you know, at the right time, because I think Zo might have repeated that I broke my hand with an expletive in there or two.
Well, Bob Sosa, you should be proud because, as this award-winning show often does, on Halloween, we did a who is the spookiest personality at the Sports Hub, and a couple votes for you.
Well, you know, I do have a dark side. I unfortunately, you know, it comes out
really
more than I'd like it to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I would say less of a dark side, more of a temperamental side at times. You know, I'm an emotional guy. You know,
he can barely contain his emotions.
Right, exactly.
What is your smelling salt? Like, what is your thing that turns you into super saucy?
Gin.
Usually when my kids not listening to me and getting ready for school on time.
Sure. You
know, totally disregarding their dad. That's it for the most part. Or it might be the, you know, I'll tell you what it is. I don't like to gripe or, you know, air grievances about my stadium experiences. But last night, I have to say, when I was trying to leave the parking lot and the flow of cars were moving along on the access, you know, roads in the parking lot at Gillette Stadium. There was one guy in particular. Yeah, usually people, you know, when it's one car comes and they let one car into the line, and then the next car comes and they let a car into the line, and it flows very nicely. But there was one particular guy that was especially obnoxious and cutting me off. And now that for a moment did draw out the worst in my nature. I was none too pleased about that.
Do you use real swear words? Or, do you use real swear words or fake swear words?
Fiddlesticks.
No, they're authentic.
Okay. I can see you being the new, what's his name, Michael Douglas, in an update of Falling Down.
Yeah.
You seem to fit the stereotype.
And this may not surprise you as well. There have been times in our you know, pregame dinner discussions when the subject is straight from sports where I've used a few swear words with some of my colleagues who travel with me on the road.
It's you and what's his face? They're always getting into it.
Mark Capello.
Yeah. Politics, always a good thing to talk about with him.
Yeah,
Scott's told me, like, Sosie's, like, legit gets pissed. Like, you've gotten up from dinner, haven't you?
No, I haven't gotten up.
Okay.
But I think I've abruptly, at times, cut off the conversation. not too proud of that, by the way.
It's all right. He can be annoying. All right, Bob, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right, so we'll return.
The games are only half of it. Thatcher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I'm not going. Again with the dilly.
Night at 5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, Mary yesterday ran the New York City Marathon.
She did. And, you know, after what happened to her at the Boston Marathon, she was contacted by the people at Michelob Ultra, and they said, hey, you know, we know that things didn't go the way that you had hoped for your marathon here. How would you like to make up it and try to run a real marathon, and we'll get you to the and finish one over at the New York City Marathon. You can run on Team Ultra. And to that, she originally was done for good. That was like the most, she'd never run one before. And she goes, I think that that was my marathon experience. I don't think I'm going to do it again.
But I've heard that from an amazing amount of people.
Yeah. But when the New York Marathon, when they offer you a bib to that, she was like, well, I've got to do it. They also gave her $10,700 to give towards the
Tiffany's?
Jimmy Fund. No, not Tiffany's. No, no.
She buy something nice.
It went towards the Jimmy Fund, Dana-Farber, rather. So thanks to them. But when I was up there, it was wild because there are a bunch of different types of people who are on this Team Ultra. They found these, you know, kind of inspirational stories, and they put them on this team together. And it's one of those moments when you meet some of the people on the team where you're just like, I'm not bitching about anything. Like, I mean, you have that moment where you say to yourself, all right, some of the crap I got going on in my life, if these guys can do this, then I can do anything. They had a blind runner, a blind marathon runner, and his person, whose guide who ran with them. And I talked to him for a while, and it's fascinating to me. So first of all, just running a marathon blind would be tough enough. But the New York Marathon, you have to understand, it doesn't spread out as much as far as room between people as the Boston Marathon does. You are constantly amongst people. Like, I saw Mary at mile 18, and she still had thousands of people in front of her, thousands behind her, and you don't have much space to move left or right. You can't really sprint in this marathon or run super fast because it is, I don't want to say a log jam, but
it sounds like an absolute nightmare.
It's 50,000 runners. How much is the Boston Marathon? Do we know? But this is, I know, one of the biggest of all time. It's one of the biggest. It's 50,000. So the way that it worked, and I talked to his guide as well, is that the guide has this thing that kind of looks like, it's almost like a rubber band, like a large rubber band, and it's got a ring on each side, and they run side by side while they do that. How unbelievable is that, to run 26 miles during a marathon with all of these people around you? And a lot of them don't know you're blind, so like some of them might, you know, like maybe try to cut in front of you or behind, and you know, usually where you would slow down. So that's pretty amazing. And then there was a little person who I guess is from around here, and he has run like a ton of marathons before. And that dude was a badass. I got to talk to him. So he, like, this is, I forget what number marathon this was, but this is like old hat to him. Like, it's no problem whatsoever.
14 or 15. I'm looking at his Twitter page here. 14 or 15 marathons. I mean, before the Twitter, his Twitter page says 14-time marathon finisher. I don't know if he's updated that or not.
Do you know what his time was?
I do not.
Because from what I heard, he crushed it. Like, crushed it yesterday. But I would like to look that up and check it out. But it was kind of funny because Mary, you know, she finished it. And she did surprisingly well. She surprised herself, and I was surprised. She did, I think, 5 hours and 40 minutes. And when she was done, you know, there's people at the finish line, Fred, who are like throwing up and doing, I mean, it's not the healthiest thing in the world, obviously, to do, especially if, you know, you're underprepared. So there are people at the end, and they were, you know, kind of a wreck. And Mary comes out, and she's like, wow, I can't believe it. I can't believe how good I feel during all this. And then around midnight last night, the adrenaline wore off, and we were walking through the airport, and she was like, the bells. I hear them. She's like Quasimodo, like dragging a leg. Ah! Every joint in her body was just killing her.
Until tomorrow.
Well, wait until today. Today's the day.
No, it's always 2 days after.
Oh, is it 2 days? Worst. Okay, yeah. Well, her friends were telling her, because she had a couple friends who've only run it once before, too, and she said that they told her that you're going to think you broke both your knees. You're going to think that it's so much pain that you believe that you actually cracked something there because it's so painful to walk on them. They said, just give it a few days. It goes away. You're going to be fine. So on top of that, she had ran, and we had to get right to the airport. So she couldn't, like, she's got all this, like, sweat and all this crap all over. It's like, she had to, in what she ran in, we had to go all the way to the airport and fly on that. So props to the person who had to sit next to her.
Yeah, she was going to say, great. How rude.
But I also, there were a bunch of people on the plane who also had done the exact same thing because it was the last flight home to Boston that we ended up catching.
Did you see anyone crap themselves?
No. I didn't see that. Marathons, yeah, I guess usually it's like longer than that where you would crap yourself, but one here, I think, that someone
No. I know more than a couple of people who've crapped themselves.
Just a simple amount, not one of those mega or what are they called? Ultra marathons?
No, in a regular marathon. Now, they didn't necessarily, they had to go crap. It wasn't necessarily a crap themselves.
Oh, okay.
But I told you the story about my friend Jay when he was preparing for the Detroit Marathon, and this was before Detroit got normal again. And it was a Sunday morning, and he was doing, like, the long run with his brother.
Yeah.
and they ended up in, he lived downtown, and he ended up in a section of downtown where he got, like, hit with, like, okay, I got to go now. And he's, like, trying different doors, and, like, nothing's opening up. So he ended up in a high school. Some high school left their doors open.
Well, that's nice. Yeah. She took a picture of a couple signs that were out there. One was, if the Black Eyed Peas could make six albums, then you can finish this marathon.
Why are they taking shots at Fergie and the boys?
Well, necessary?
Because they're not very good, no. I would have to believe.
Well, that's good news. And so now she can get back to not running marathons.
Yeah, well she, that, I mean, she's even said, like, she's done, which, of course, you know.
Good for her.
We'll see if that happens.
Sanity reigns again.
But that was it. But she was done. But, I mean, that was really cool. Of there were a lot of people tracking her yesterday and a lot of people who were,
I tracked her for a little while.
Yeah, that app is unbelievable. Yeah. So on top of that, that was very cool, and I want to say thanks once again to Team Ultra, because they ended up, the only reason she did it was because they gave her money that went to Dana-Farber. So because of Team Ultra, and they treated us very nice, they flew us up there and they put us in the hotel, and it was great, and they gave all the money to charity, and I think they're going to continue to work with her, so, which is nice, which means that if she does happen to run again, she might have a sponsor to give money towards Dana-Farber once again. Cool. Which would be kind of nice. So thank you to all those fine people. And it also means that there was a big after party with a lot of beer that I did not want to be at, because we were all... You see, I was exhausted just bringing the kids around the city all day, which was a pain in the ass as well. So,
yeah. You say you meet people and then you got nothing to complain about. I'll take that challenge.
I will show you.
I'll find plenty of things to complain about.
Mm-hmm. It's tough to. It's tough to when you see that.
Not for me. I'll be able to complain about anything.
And that is a gift.
Yeah, I see this. A little guy ran the marathon. All right, I still got things to say. Why'd they take the mic off the air?
Is the mic canceled?
Yeah.
That kind of sucks.
That's what I'll say. Yeah. Why isn't Peter part of the Kiss last tour?
Well, we don't know if he's not going to be. We don't know that yet. We know Ace is up there. There's rumors that he might be back with them.
All right, Rich, we have the stack coming up. What will we talk about?
Oh, it looks like the Red Sox continue to let the party roll all over the city. On top of that, there is a new, one of the highest grossing movies of all time just announced four sequels that might have the dumbest names of all time.
Aye. All right, here are the headlines.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 85 Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
98.5 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The stack is brought to you by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. Rich, what is going on?
First of all, what a kick in the balls Saturday night. Boston Celtics against Indiana. Oladipo at the last second hits that, or last couple seconds hits that three. It was funny because Kyrie Irving was the hero of the night after he hit two threes back to back. And then in the last couple seconds, he couldn't make a fairly easy layup, and the game was over. But, John, you called that game, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you were. Can we pull up the call? Come on, I need to hear John Wallach's. Yeah, do you not have it there in front of you? I want to hear your call of Kyrie Irving's three that should have won it for them.
Hang on a second. Well, I'll talk amongst yourselves. I'll get it for you.
Shot. Nah, I need to hear the John
Wallach. You want the Irving made three, or do you want the...
I want to hear the Irving made three and the Oladipo punch to the balls. Right. I want to hear happy Wallach, sad Wallach.
Punch to the balls? All right.
There he goes.
All right, Irving. All right, here's the second Irving made three.
You get better than you.
I have to.
What are you listening to right there?
I have no idea. How about this? All right, I think we're good. You ready to go?
Okay.
Here we go. It's the second Irving three.
Irving, watched by Collison. Irving behind a Horford screen. Irving, still waiting. Fires away. He made another three.
Oh,
Kyrie Irving has magically appeared from the phone booth.
Oh, magic.
Back-to-back threes.
From the phone booth.
It's a four-point game.
Superman.
Timeout, Nate McMillan.
Oh, he just gave me a snotty nose. Oh, my God. Kyrie, get in the house right now. Stop doing that to them kids out there. Wow.
37.2 seconds left.
Magic.
Yep,
that's magically
right.
Appeared.
And here's the Oladipo.
They're trying to keep this ball out of Kyrie's hands.
Gets inbounds Jason Tatum. There's Kyrie. 20 on the shot clock as he walks up over midcourt. Irving to the left. 15 on the shot clock now. Kyrie. Hands for Morris. Morris watched by Thaddeus Young. There's Horford. Down low. Kyrie Irving missed the layup. And the rebound comes down to Indiana. 7 seconds left. McMillan goes without a timeout. Oladipo for three, and he makes the shot.
pick.
There you go.
Okay. Well, all right. You seem excited that he made it. What do you hate, the Celtics or something?
That's right.
So that was a kick in the nuts, but at least things aren't going as bad as they seem to be in New Orleans. Now, Anthony Davis seems to be saying with some of his comments that maybe everything isn't as great in the, hey, I love the Pelicans world. After winning their first four games in a row, they have lost four in a row.
I know you're going with this. You're the first person I thought of when I read this over the weekend.
I got no problem reading quotes from Anthony Davis. Okay.
Keep going.
So he said after the game, he goes, of course, I know that in order to win games, a lot of pressure is going to be on me. If we lose, it's on me. If we win, they give my team the credit, and I'm fine with that. Sure you are. A perfect example was against the Warriors, he said. I don't have a good game, and we lose. So I got to play almost perfect every night to give us a chance to win. But my teammates do a great job. Even the games I didn't play, those guys have been battling night in and night out to get victories. I don't try to put too much pressure on myself, but I know it's there. So to that, Danny Ainge.
Here's the thing. That's right. Anthony Davis eligible to sign a Supermax deal this coming off season, and this is decision time. If he declines to sign the Supermax, then it's open season. And according to one report out of Cleveland I saw over the weekend, the Lakers and Celtics are monitoring the Anthony Davis situation closely.
Oh, without a doubt. Now, do I think he will go to the Lakers? Yes. Do I think he will go to the Celtics? Probably not. Do I hope he does? Oh, you bet your ass. And the best was that this weekend I saw a bunch of debates thrown out there as to whether or not the Celtics should trade Jason Tatum as part of the package to get Anthony Davis. And I'm like, you bet your ass you should. I don't care. There is no one on this team.
If I'm New Orleans, I ask for Tatum first.
Well, of course you do. So. And you give him, you give them Tatum. I love Jason Tatum. I know he's going to be a superstar. Anthony Davis is one of the best players in the league. Top three, arguably.
Yeah.
LeBron.
Arguably.
Durant. Him and Steph are probably about as valuable. Arguably. So he's definitely top five, if not top three. You trade anything that you have and several of anything that you have to get Anthony Davis on this team. I don't even know why that was a debate with some people over the weekend. This is all I got, John. This is all, I hope. This is all I got. So quotes
like this. I understand. I got it.
I'll throw them at you every time I see one, I'll throw it at you.
Okay.
By the way, Jimmy Butler's still being an a-hole. So he's getting booed while sitting down. And as a matter of fact, he sat out a Wednesday's game against the Jazz with general soreness, quote unquote. And when he was asked about it, he goes, why are you so worried about my injury? He said, and then criticized the media's role in reporting the story. He said, if all this talk wasn't going on or not because I sat out because my body was sore, you would be asking me questions like this. I don't know if it's true. He goes, so stop asking me questions whether I'm going to sit out or not. If I'm going to sit out, you probably wouldn't talk to me the day I sit out. But if I do, then I do. And you can create a story about it with a lot of stuff and make up a lot of stuff like y'all normally do.
Oh, you missed the beginning part of that where Butler told the media he was going to tell the team whether or not he was going to play.
Yeah, that's right. So he's basically, I'm the one who decides whether I'm on the court
or not. If I'm sore, I'm going to tell him I'm not going to play. So, of course, the media comes back to him when he doesn't play. He said, how are you feeling?
It would just be great if everyone's like, I'm not signing you.
Are right now, like, no one's like clamoring for a trade or like, apparently according to the reports that were out there, they're not offering much.
If you're Jimmy Butler and you are it's in the last year of his contract, you're due a massive payday. Why are you behaving like an ass?
Because he has been entitled his whole life and this is the way that he behaves.
There's some part of him that knows this is wrong. There has to be an advisor telling him don't do this.
It doesn't matter. I mean, when people have been depending on you for their income since you were, 11 years old.
Yeah.
I think that comes with a certain bit of entitlement. I can't imagine how hard it is to manage the egos of those guys, especially in basketball. Because at least in hockey, you got to travel kind of like a jackass for a while. You got to play. If you go to college, you got to play a certain amount of years.
Yeah.
The NFL can be very humbling right away. In baseball, it's, a lot of these people grew up in horrific conditions. Basketball, they're just like, hey.
By the way, speaking of hockey, I went by the NHL store when I was in New York City. There's actually an NHL store.
Yep.
And guess whose face is on the side of the building representing the Bruins?
Oh, I would say Kevin Miller.
Charlie McAvoy. That's random.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it was like Jonathan Toews. They had, of course, Connor McDavid. And
Austin Matthews, probably.
What's his name? Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
And Charlie McAvoy.
Everyone's got the Mac fever.
I just thought it was very strange. why he would be the one they chose to put up there. So everyone knows that the Red Sox went and blew $300,000 on a whole bunch of champagne. That story was reported last week. Guess how much the tip was that they left?
Let's see here.
$4.
No, I'm going to say that they left a solid 5%.
$195,000 for the tip.
All for those douchey bottles of champagne that are only bought by the highest level of douche.
Here's what they bought. 48 bottles of Dom, 43 bottles of Ace of Spades. Those are those big-ass ones.
Yeah, this is mine.
I would never drink this. 60 bottles of Moet. Am I saying that right? 5 bottles of Vivier and 12 bottles of Perrier Jouvet. And a bottle of Cristal for good measure. Someone just wanted to pour it on.
You got to throw that in.
You know, some of the girls that were there.
Not a party unless you have that.
No, without a doubt. So there we go. So it was a $300,000 bill, and the tip was around $195,000, so $500,000 that they blew at the club. Congratulations. So ESPN had to apologize after James Carville went on the air during the big game day thing that they do. So James Carville goes up there, big SEC guy, and starts bitching and doing some conspiracy theories.
Couldn't play against Alabama because of the SEC. Missouri's best defensive player couldn't play against Alabama because the SEC kicked him out. A&M's best defensive player couldn't play against Alabama because he was taken out. And now the best defensive player in the conference is not going to play the first half because for nothing. He did nothing wrong.
Are you a trained official on this, though, James? Are you sure he did nothing?
Nothing.
That is every bar south of the Mason-Dixon line that you don't want to walk into. That discussion is happening in that same accent. So apparently ESPN freaked out because the commissioner called them and said, I don't like him saying that there's conspiracy theories. So ESPN had to break into programming to say this.
We have an apology to make on behalf of ESPN. While appearing as a guest on College Game Day earlier today, James Carville offered his thoughts on SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey. As we regularly demonstrate here on ESPN, diverse opinions are encouraged. However, these actions were over the top, and we would like to apologize to Commissioner Sankey.
What are we doing?
I used to work with that guy that was talking there.
James
Chris
Carville?
Yes, I was on the Clinton campaign. You know what people are giving? Did you hear how people were giving Al Roker crap for dressing as the scientist from Back to the Future?
Oh, yeah. As Marty McFly. Doc Brown.
Yeah, as Doc Brown. They were, because people were like, you know, I can't wear blackface, but this guy can go as a white character from a film.
Did he go whiteface?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
He just dressed like the guy, so he's saying he was appropriating a white character.
Okay. One of my son's friends went as Black Panther. He's white, so is that a bad thing?
Well, my son wore a LeBron James costume.
Well, that you can't do that.
Well, he was in blackface.
He wore
a LeBron James costume. So are you saying that is somehow inherently racist?
Who is saying that?
It was a big, huge news story.
No, I saw that, but was it like one guy, or was it like the, you know?
It's always one guy, but then it's the internet, and then the internet goes nuts.
And they do their thing.
And so Al Roker had to explain to people that it's indeed okay if you go as a black character if you're white.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't wear blackface, because there's a history of...
Right, that natural shows and things like that.
Yes, there's a sordid history around that. And so I could see if Al Roker painted himself white, you'd have some sort of, I guess, argument if he really felt like doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little concerned that people think that you can't dress as a white or black character.
That kind of limits who you can dress up as.
I believe my son was Steph Curry for one Halloween, so I'm having a lot of trouble. I'm learning something new every day.
Then he's going to be shamed on the internet when he gets older. So Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen biopic, ended up making a lot of money this weekend, $50 million. That is somewhat surprising.
You know what scares me about that movie?
What?
Is that it's going to have too much Queen music in it.
Why?
Because, like, it would be an interesting story if it was, there wasn't, I just don't need huge musical scenes.
I heard there is one massive scene at the, is it the US Festival?
Isn't that the Live Aid.
The Live Aid, that's right. That is one of the better concert scenes ever put on film.
Right.
They say that it's like a breakthrough, like cinematography and everything.
Is that it, though?
Oh, I'm sure there's got to be parts in the studio where they're doing like Bohemian Rhapsody and everything.
Because I don't need a lot of Bohemian Rhapsody.
You see, the story of Bohemian Rhapsody, the making of it in the studio, is phenomenal. Like, yes, I read an oral history on, like, what they all said when he came in, and it's like, I've got this huge operatic piece. And the way that they had to record it back in the day isn't like digital where you do it now. Like, they had to like take these massive spools of tape and tape them all together, and they were all around the room because there were so many different layers in the vocals. So, I mean, that's a great story. But I'm with you. I mean, I don't have to hear the song again, but the making of it's cool.
I don't want to hear Bohemian Rhapsody ever again in my life.
See, that's a movie I would like to see.
I would like to see it, too. I'm worried about the too much music.
Yeah, well, if you don't like the music and you like more science fiction...
Science fiction fantasy! Beware, the elves approach!
Avatar, the sequels have been announced. The movie that made more money than almost any other film that no one can name one character in. That is the most mind-blowing thing to me. Like, Avatar is like, there's an Avatar land in Disney World. Avatar, I think, is the highest-grossing film, or used to be the highest-grossing film of all time. Who can name one character in that movie?
I can't sit through it.
Dude, it's not good. And I like James Cameron. That movie is not a good film. But there are four sequels coming out, and apparently the internet is extremely pissed at the names of the sequels.
Oh, I can see why.
Avatar 2, The Way of Water. Avatar 3, The Seed Bearer. Avatar 4,
That's what they used to call me.
The Seed Bearer.
Really? Baby, what do you want, a boy or a girl? I can make it happen.
Avatar 4, The Tolkien Rider.
The Tolkien Rider?
Yeah, you want me to You want me to dress up as a damn thing and do you? The Tolkien Rider.
Like a hobbit.
You give me a token, and I give you a nice push.
A token, yes. And
I'll let you ride.
Avatar 5, The Quest for Iwiwa.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
If I'm pronouncing it correctly.
When are all these sequels going to be finished by? How many years in advance do we have to wait for all of this?
We got a break.
2020 is the first of these sequels.
John, you know damn well when they're coming out. All right, so we'll be back and find out what Zolak and Bertrand have on the way.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Honey at 5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And we have a man in studio by the name of Scott Zolak, who was up late yesterday calling the game.
Yeah.
Almost broke his hand.
No.
How you feeling? How's your hand
feel? Great. Feels great. Look at it.
Okay.
Fine.
Because, I mean, it looks like for a moment when you...
I mean, sometimes adrenaline gets going. You get to start whacking things.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a fight club?
I have not been in a fight club. Have you?
I don't know. You ever been like drinking with your buddies and you got a fight circle and you're slapping each other?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody chips a tooth or breaks a jaw.
We have spanking circles where we just go around and give each other a nice rap to the rump.
Well, we would do that with like the linemen. We went out to Super Bowl out in San Diego and we went to this place called the Sandbar, a barefoot bar, and they had the sand pit. And it was like me and like five linemen, and it was Bledsoe. And you have to stand there and you have to let them, like, you don't punch hard, but you got to punch hard enough to where you stun them. You see who
in the chin?
Like off the chin. So like, you know, it's the grazing of seeing if you can get anybody to...
What?
I don't know. It just...
That's not normal behavior. And last you guy, understand like, that, right?
Whoever can take the best punch, like, that's cool, man. We'll get you the next round, you know?
Yeah.
For a lot of guys that had some money, like, I go buy my next round. I don't need to, like, take the punch.
Did you ever win?
I won. Yeah.
So the glory.
Then you get worried, like sometimes you hit the guy too hard. You're like, oh, I knew I got you. He's like, no, I'm good. And then he's gonna hit you harder. You know.
So the prize for letting someone smack you, like punch you hard in the chin,
would be a
$6 beer.
Yeah, or shots.
You were about to demonstrate on Hardy, weren't you?
No, I'm not. Like,
weren't you? You were about to hit Hardy.
You know what I mean? You don't cold cock him in the face. It's just it's a chip off. It's like
I see
chipping away at just a little crazy.
Okay.
Just right because normally it's the jaw reflex that jams back and knocks you out. Okay. So you don't want to break anybody's jaw or teeth.
No, you don't want that. That's not something that you want.
Hardy, have you ever seen Zolak do a smelling salt before the show? Because I don't believe that he's never done it before the show.
Before the show?
Only before your broadcast during the Patriots games.
Yeah, but I'm not in the booth right at the beginning. I've never been at the booth right at the beginning of the game, but I totally believe it. How's your hand?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, he was smacking that desk around like nobody's business.
There was a sign in front of the Sports Hub sign. Get that thing going. That was a big touchdown.
Stacey was legitimately concerned about you last night. Did Zoe really break his hand?
No. Fine. It's all for show.
He's spread like, he showed compassion. I tell you what,
we have this one guy that sits in front of us. We nicknamed him Bulldog. I'm not going to give his name out. And he double drank. He consistently has two big 22 ounces in his hands. The entire game. And it gets to a point where when he He's out. People start pouring their beers into his beer. And he's just, it's nonstop. And he sits right in front of us. He's super fan. Guy never goes to the bathroom. I've never seen anything like
that. Is he wearing something?
Hardy knows who he is. Yeah. Same clothes he has on every day and a hat. And the hat was off last night. He's turning around. He said, I'm not calling tomorrow. I'm pretty drunk.
All right.
That was first quarter.